You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
There is a place where time stands still, where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my land.
Took it in the guts, Barry. Far away from my
home. All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct answers,
you get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
Good morning, everybody. This is Annie for Showreel. 3CR's look at the Australian film industry and all the other moving images that are going on around the place with all those arty people who love to corral them. And next week, of course, is the beginning of the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival in cinema. It's already happening online, and one of the best things about the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival is the series of programs of shorts. So I think there's about four sessions of shorts, and today we're going to look at a couple of the films from the different short sessions. Some of them are also distributed amongst particular themes. And the first chat I had with Mitchell Mansfield Smith and cinematographer Neftali Jorolji about their film Grip Is Dead, as they tell us, it's part of a particular focus on health shorts. So we'll start off with our chat with Mitchell and Neftali, which is called Grip Is Dead. All right, thank you very much for coming in and having a chat with me. We're talking about Grip Is Dead. It's a short that you guys have made, and it's going to be on at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival as part of, what is it?
The Sports Shorts Night, which is running July 8th.
Yeah, right, okay. Now, tell me, the subject matter itself is really exciting, isn't it? Because it's all about trying to shoot fast cars doing fast things. So let's go to you first, Neftali.
Yep.
You're the cinematographer. So
yes.
Tell me about the challenges of making this as terrifying as it looks.
I think because it's such a... We haven't shot like something like this before, so it's just like getting the angles, like for you to feel the car like sliding into the corners and everything like that. Because that was something that we really wanted to capture, because we wanted for you to feel the car sliding into the corner and being there with Patrick and stuff like that. And also Patrick is just bringing us to his world, basically.
Yeah, that's so, right. And yeah. But what I noticed is that you, in that exploration with the camera, you got wheel shots, you got inside the car, you did a whole range of things quite besides the what the audience goes there to see, which is that fabulous sliding across the surface with lots of smoke.
Yeah.
So how did you do, what kind of cameras did you use to get those kind of angles?
The cameras inside the car?
Yeah.
The cameras inside the car, we used a GoPro.
Yeah.
And also on the side of the car, we used a GoPro. We just sticked it, like, on the side of the car. And we used the FX6 and a Sony a7 III and a Sony a7 S3.
Okay, and so you guys have met at film school, is it?
So, yeah, we're both actually still attending film school. So both go to SAE... University College in Melbourne, and
and that the reason why I brought that up is because you've plotted and planned this short, haven't you? And that's why the camera angles are so important, to see if it works.
Yeah.
I think when we set out to make the project, a big part of it was that we really wanted the audience to feel the visceral nature of drifting. We really wanted to take them on board what it's sort of like. And I think our cinematography really reflected that choice. The choice in cameras as well was purely based on testing. We did a lot of testing for this film because we'd never shot something like this before. We knew how we wanted to shoot it, but...
You imagined it first.
Correct.
Yeah. And we also knew the testing was important because we never used the FX6 before, because we used other cameras, not the FX6. And we researched and we realized, oh, the FX6 has like low light capabilities. So we just decided, okay, let's do a test. So we set a day aside, we tested it, and we were like, yeah, this is going to work.
Mm, that's so right. That, and you also don't want it to break.
Yeah, it's very expensive. If we break it, the school is going to kill us.
Yeah, very exciting. And how did you, because this is a profile of, it's a portrait of Pat Barley. How did you meet Pat?
I think I can probably talk more on that because I sort of introduced everyone to the project. So Pat Barley, funnily enough, is someone that I went to primary school in Darwin with, and we reconnected working for the same company. So we reconnected and I basically said to him, look, I'm really interested in getting a little look into what your life is like as a semi-professional drifter, and I want to sort of tell that story, and I want the audience to feel what it's like for you to drift in a feeling sense. And Pat is, I think, a very hard subject. He's a very difficult subject to...
He doesn't talk a lot.
He doesn't talk a lot. He's very...
Taciturn's the word.
Yeah. He's very, very quiet. He's very reserved and very stoic. So...
That's one of the reasons why it's so strong, isn't it, though?
Yeah.
Because you've got this juxtaposition, sitting beside each other, this stoic guy and the speed and elegance of the cars. I mean, I'm sure that this film is introducing a lot of people to the concept of drifting.
Well, that was also something we wanted to set out to do. We wanted to take the audience on the journey that we went on because we weren't really familiar with drifting ourselves. We wanted to...
I was familiar with it.
So you knew
about it?
I knew about drifting because of... I'm a huge fan of Tokyo Drift, Fast and Furious, so I knew about it. But when Mitch came up to me and said... Hey, I know a guy who knows how to drift, and he's a friend of mine. We work together, actually. His name is Patrick. I was like, yeah, let's do that. Like, why not just use him and everything? So, yeah, but I think the thing is I just didn't realize what I was getting myself into. That was, like, the part I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, because it's a big deal, isn't it? I mean, how long was the shoot?
The shoot was 3 or 4 days. Yeah. We shot it over a week. We had a sit-down interview with him, filmed some scenes at his house. It was really interesting. When we actually went to his house, he had like a shelf, and it was, I called it the memory shelf because it just contained all of his memories. Whether he thought it or not, I saw that and I was like, oh, wow, you have a whole shelf filled with every little thing that you've ever done. I thought it was really nice.
It's a family affair. Correct. That's the other thing that was fascinating because you, in such a short film, you actually cover a lot of ground.
I thought so as well. I think the family angle is something we really wanted to touch on because it's super important.
Well, you told a whole story.
Yes.
Which was what your brief was, wasn't it, school?
Yeah.
But the story went a lot of versions.
We had a lot of different concepts in editing. We went and put the film together. There was a lot more of a focus on drifting itself. In such a short time period, though, you have to really choose the strongest parts. So
it's a bit like those remarkable surfing movies where you can be completely lost in a wave, endless film of waves, as opposed to having a something that the wave is set in.
The longest part of the film is the end section where we're sort of with Patrick in this poetic setup for this final drifting run in the last sequence of the film. And we really wanted to communicate what his sense of release is. I think we succeeded quite well with that.
Yeah, we did.
He felt comfortable with you guys.
He felt very comfortable on the day. He was a lot more animated that day as well. He was so animated. He was so excited.
And you'll see it in the film. You can see it like when you're at his place and when he's at the track. Like you can see he's all...
He's engaged.
He's just adrenaline and he's smiling and everything. You can just see it.
So ready to get in that car and just drive. And it's, I don't know, I compared it, when we did our initial pitch for the project to our class, I compared it to like a skateboarder. Some skateboarders are really, really low-key. They're not super big personalities. I don't think Patrick's a super big personality. But he, on that day, was so much more animated than he had been throughout the whole shoot. That you couldn't help but like be like, yeah, you go out there and drift that car.
Yeah, you know, that you become quite engaged in why a person is so enamored of it.
Melbourne Documentary Film Festival returns to Cinema Nova from July 7 with Documentaries Reimagined. Warm up the cold winter days with an eclectic program of local and international documentaries from independent and emerging talents. Proudly ranked among Film Freeway's top 100 festivals worldwide for 11 consecutive years, Melbourne Documentary Film Festival delivers stories that stay with you long after the credits roll. Screening from July 7 for a limited time at Cinema Nova, 380 Lygon Street, Carlton. 3CR sponsor.
And you're with Annie on 3CR. We've just been talking to the young filmmakers of Grip Is Dead, which is married to a couple of other shorts and a feature called Going Dry, which focuses on a variety of people taking the challenge of being alcohol-free for a couple of months and the investigation into the positivity that it enters into their lives. It's quite a fascinating film, actually, and the whole program is about Health Shorts, it's called. Health Shorts, that's what the session is. It's on the 8th of July at Nova. We're going to move to another short, and it's by Chloe Taylor, who's also a young filmmaker. And this is about, this film focuses on a school reunion. It's called Reunion. And one of the things that's most interesting about Chloe as a filmmaker is her precise approach to the filmmaking game. I thought this was quite fascinating.
Are you a dedicated filmmaker, or is this something that you decided you wanted to document?
I have a background working for creative agencies and commercial film production companies, though I was always on the business side of things. So I was never the one who got to kind of like call the creative shots or anything like that. In working at a film production company in London that specialized in real stories and documentary work, I was exposed to that kind of thinking and filmmaking up close, and I got really inspired and excited. I had the opportunity to produce a friend's narrative short back in 2019. And that really got the wheels churning for me. It was exciting because we got into like a couple of festivals as well, but then kind of coincided with me getting a visa to move to the States. And then also obviously the next year, COVID, which, you know, as a kind of like emerging, aspiring filmmaker, threw a lot of kind of like question marks in the mix. And really I was just slammed with, you know, American work culture. So I didn't have too much capacity to kind of do anything outside of work, but I reached a point where I was able to create a little bit more like balance in life in like 2024. And so around that time is when I started working on a feature documentary, which is in late development, early production. We've filmed about 30% of it. And one of the things that kept coming up in like applications and questions and people that I was meeting was what else I'd done. And because I didn't have too much else to my name, I started to, you know, dive into the treasure trove of ideas for making a short film. And this topic was something that had kind of like lurked in the back of my mind for a couple of years, and that I knew I could kind of like sustainably produce within a certain amount of time. There were constraints around it that meant that it felt, you know, like something I could achieve. And so it was the story that I decided to pursue. And I guess when you're making a feature film as well, it can be like 7, 8, 9, 10 years long of a process. So the idea of like following a short in a more compressed timeline and kind of enjoying the journey and the roller coaster along the way was really appealing to me as well, to kind of, you know, break things up between the long process that is making a feature film, a feature documentary.
Did you have a small crew?
Yeah. So for a reunion, it was like a team effort for sure. So camera A, the one that kind of like is the more like symmetrical version of the girls front on, is something that like I set up and determined. For some of our shoot days, we had a great second camera assistant, Beth, who was part of the mix as well. And so that was like the secondary angle that we were able to capture for some of the shoot days as well. And then there was also archive that was integrated as well. And that required me diving into the Facebook archives from like many, many years ago, speaking to different participants, going on the profiles of girls that I went to high school with, like back in the day, and asking for permissions, tracking down people and asking whether they were okay to have their faces in there or whether we needed to blur them. So lots of like coordination on that front as well. And so as the like producer on the project, that was also something that I was doing. And the person who like knew them all as well. So
Yeah, well, it's very personal, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, for sure. Obviously the topic is a high school reunion, but I feel like as someone who wasn't able to attend the reunion itself because I was overseas by that point, this almost served as like my reunion as well.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because being such a personal story, and I guess you did have distance because you were overseas, but it must have been in some respects, I mean, like all documentaries of this sort, kind of confronting in a way. That's the suspense of it, isn't it?
Yeah. And there's like, you know, some girls who I filmed with, I have a relationship with in the present day and who I've remained friends with since then, including Clarice, the captain, that I did some like preparatory work in the lead up to the reunion because I was still living in Sydney at the time. And that's kind of like, I guess, where my investment came from, is I'd like partially helped with the planning. Then there were moments where things definitely got like emotional and I really wanted to like get up in the middle of a shot and give them a hug in more intense moments. But for certain portions of film where we go into like harder territory, I had to kind of like resist and just let it breathe for a second.
It's an interesting film because it's about an event that failed really, because a whole lot of people didn't turn up, which it poses a question. It didn't matter how it went, because it would always be an interesting dynamic. It either failed or it didn't fail, but the very failure was the thing to investigate. But the other thing about it is there were people who talked about their self-identification at the time and how that affected who they became later. How did you get to speak to those people who considered themselves to be outsiders, who were very open about their contempt and annoyance about school?
I did a couple of waves of outreach to different people and shot the film over the course of maybe like 6 weeks, something like that. There were the initial people that responded. I think every person that I spoke to, I really appreciated their nuance. And obviously they're a kind of like different versions of stories that I was told that we weren't able to include as well. But in the first couple of shoots, I realized that the people who I had interviewed to date were maybe a little bit more like neutral on the topic. They were like, oh yeah, I didn't attend, but I'd be open to attending next time, like that kind of thing. And then in one of my like final rounds of outreach, as I was like, you know, trying to get people to join the project, this isn't an advocacy film to say that people should go to their high school reunion. I'm looking for a range of opinions, and I'd really appreciate and welcome any perspectives from people who didn't attend, wouldn't attend, and like, I'm going to treat you with the same respect as people who said that they would or whatever, because it's less about like judgment of whether someone did or didn't go, or whether it is or isn't something that they're interested in. And it's more about the curiosity piece. So once I kind of like made that more explicit, I got a couple of responses that led to some really great participants wanting to be involved in the project too.
You went back and looked at archival material, like there's photos, but there's also Facebook and stuff, which means, of course, there's a whole lot of different formats involved in. Did you have challenges in that area?
Yeah, it was interesting. So there were, I guess things were comprised of a couple of different things. When I think about like the archive that was featured, there was like the present day footage of the girls like flipping through the yearbooks. There were like just like static photos that I'd taken through the yearbooks of our subjects to kind of like get that little bit of like personal background as well. In going to the Facebook archives to find the videos, that was another interesting piece. But I think the question of it all was really kind of like uniting it all from a treatment perspective. Because of my work in creative agencies, I've got a lot of like, you know, contacts and friends who are art directors. So I actually tapped my friend Brianna to ask if she could help to kind of like unite the footage so that it felt kind of intentional. And the blue background and the kind of like cursive yellow font that we use is inspired from the yearbooks themselves. The tartan that was used is like inspired by the skirts that we wore as part of our like Catholic schoolgirl uniform. Like kind of like little moments where we're like, oh, how do we jump from here to here and have things not feel too like disjointed? And I think some of those visual devices and like graphic design elements really helped to kind of like pull things together.
As a person who's produced this film, like the writing phase, I mean, you had, you've got a very clear idea of the fluidity of the visual form, which is mm-hmm. what a film is, of course. Mm-hmm. But the writing is the anchor. So did you change your perspective to the writing or the anchors as it proceeded because you wanted it to have a better story arc? Or
So I'll loop in or reference my amazing editor, Rhea, who I worked on with this film. We don't have like, you know, writing credits or anything like that. It's like Chloe, director, producer, Rhea, editor. But we did kind of like co-write this story for sure. There was a lot of upfront research that I did around high school reunions. So kind of like trawling through like Reddit threads and psychology articles and even speaking to an author of one of those and really kind of like grounding myself in all the considerations that come into play from just regular people regarding high school reunions. And those things are kind of like timeless, like whether it 2009, 1999, 1989, the anxiety of like returning to your reunion and like what comes along with that is something that feels, you know, relatable across generations. But the piece about, I guess, like the social media was interesting because I guess that when I think about the year that we graduated, like 2009, circa 2007, we were all more on MySpace. MySpace doesn't exist anymore. Right before high school ended, we all got on Facebook. And so I think a lot of us still have each other on Facebook from that time. And there aren't many grades, I think, like above us that would have kind of like done that kind of like blanket ad of everybody, because Facebook just like wasn't the popular thing at the time. And obviously now it is incumbent social media platform that has like lasted up until now 2026. So yeah, there was like lots of research and thought that went on behind the scenes in the lead up to it. So I did have theories going in about like how social media might have like shifted perceptions around attendance of something like that. All the research and anecdotes that I found out through those other pieces as well. I had preparatory calls with all of the girls ahead of the shoot dates to kind of like get a feel for their experiences, just so I could have an idea of like what the best thing to ask in the room might be, only because we were like limited on time and availability. It's not the kind of film where I need to like follow them for a day or anything like that. And then, yeah, it was about like getting into the edit and kind of like seeing what things felt emotive, what things felt powerful.
It's going to be showing at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival. That's pretty exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I guess the only other thing that I've worked on that's landed in a festival, I actually wasn't able to attend. Yeah, so it'll be my first time being in the room with a big group of people watching something that I've made. And yeah, it'll just be a nice moment to celebrate and connect with other filmmakers and see how it plays within a block of other curated documentaries. And yeah, it'll be very fun.
We're celebrating 50 years of 3CR on Saturday, the 4th of July at Collingwood Town Hall. There'll be stalls, displays, great food, performances, activities, prizes, and so much more. It's a birthday for us, and we can't wait to celebrate with you. Saturday, the 4th of July, Collingwood Town Hall, 11 a.m. till 4 p.m. Bring your family, tell your friends, all are welcome. 3CR, celebrating 50 years.
Let us know you're coming. Go to Humanitix and search for 3CR to RSVP.
And that's it for Showreel today. And coming up next is Published or Not. Don't forget to look up the program for Melbourne Documentary Film Festival, which starts next week. And we're going to go out with the number 4 band, Closer. And it's part of a documentary that's on the 11th of Saturday, the 11th at 4:20 p.m. The Half Barbaric Twang, and you'll see why it's such an alluring and interesting idea to go and find out more about this particular band.
I'm gonna get closer to the ground. I'm gonna lie real still, without a sound. I'm gonna put my head down in the fading light. Feel the movement of the small beasts as they prepare for the night. I'm gonna get my heartbeat down real low, so it's beating as the world turns and I say slow. Keep my mouth shut, I got nothing to say.
been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.